listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Pogba pounces with an absolute stunner as Juventus sweep past Napoli. Thanks to a little slip up from Roma, they go 1 point off the top of the Serie A table. Manchester United get a 1-0 win, and you know who it is. It's Robin van Persie with the goal against Arsenal. Celebrations in both the stands and from the player. Was it excessive? We'll ask that question a little later on. And of course, it was the Major League Soccer playoffs. The Timbers fallen against RSL. They take a 4-2 lead to Portland in the Western Conference Finals. And in the East, it's 0-0 between the Dynamo and SKC. Can anything separate these two sides? Welcome to Monday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Deuce Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. There are plenty of news and views to be discussed today on the show. Joining us a little later on, of course, will be Rafa, as always. And delighted to say that you'll be hearing from Leandro Bacuna, Brad Friedel and Paul Lambert today on the show. I did say last week that we were going to have AVB. It wasn't to be the case. A big B, though, was Bayern Munich this weekend. They become the team with the longest streak without loss in Bundesliga football, 37 games after their win over Augsburg this weekend. Wolfsburg, though, end a great run for Dortmund, a 2-1 win for the home side against Jurgen Klopp's side. And off the back of that Arsenal loss, and now this, it's suddenly been a pretty rough week or so for the boys in yellow. Schalke with a big win this weekend. Song with a hat-trick against Hamburg for Bayern Leverkusen. The Bundesliga giving us plenty of stories to be had. Serie A 2 with Pogba and co. getting a 3-0 win against Napoli in the big game in Serie A on Sunday night. Fiorentina with a 2-1 win over Sampdoria. Milan continue to struggle as they drew with Chievo. An upset there. And Roma drawing with Sassuolo. A big upset there, as the side at the top of the table sees their gap narrowed to just the 1 point. La Liga saw Ronaldo getting a hat-trick for Real Madrid in their big victory this weekend. Barca lose Messi for 8 weeks, but Neymar steps in and they beat bottom of the table Betis with a big victory. But what does that mean for Barca and Villarreal? Hold Atletico Madrid 1-1 between those two. And a cracking game at the top of the La Liga table. Villarreal showing that they can be the real deal this year. And of course, the Premier League and Major League Soccer. That's what we're going to be discussing today on the show. Robin van Persie with that fantastic goal. But bigger news here in England, and I will tell you this because we've spoken about the DirecTV being Sport and the problems that you guys had. We've spoken about NBC Sport in the US. I want to talk to you a little bit about this BT Sport. Now, British Telecom BT, obviously renowned for giving us broadband internet and telephone calls here in the UK, now produce and create their sports channel, BT Sport. They also run and operate a British version of ESPN as well. Two BT Sport channels and ESPN, free to all those who have internet. Now, BT Sport, though, on Saturday, announcing a £900 million bid, an acceptance of that bid, for the exclusive rights to Champions League football here in the UK. Now, normally in the UK, on your main television networks, BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5 and any of the other free-to-air networks that you can get. There's now actually quite a few. There used to only be those four traditionally. Now there's quite a few thanks to digital TV and Freeview. But those networks, those used to give us Champions League, FA Cup, England games and Match of the Day, of course, our Premier League fix, all free to view. ITV used to do the Champions League until this move. When 2015 comes, ITV will no longer be doing Champions League football on British television, free to view. We used to get one game a week from the Champions League, whatever, whether English teams or not in it. Now under BT, here in the UK, free to view Champions League football will consist of one game per team per season, plus the final of the Champions League. So that means if United, Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester City are in it, you'll see four games, one of each of those sides, which could also be a qualifying game, depending on what BT want to do. They will unscramble their signal, make it free to view. Four games plus the final, five games in total. It's an absolute cheap, a complete destruction for the everyday football fan that can't afford Sky and afford BT subscription as well. BT will also be raising their subscription prices, and Sky obviously aren't going to lower their subscription price. You're still going to be paying $70-$80 a month for satellite television to be able to watch the Premier League on Sky Sports. You're now going to have to pay probably another $50-$60 to watch the Champions League on BT too. So if you want the ultimate package, it's going to cost you a lot more. The modern day football fan is being driven out of the game with ticket prices and now television sales. It's meant to be that competition will help reduce the costs because the two sides will start battling it out. This just won't be the case, I'm afraid. It's going to ruin football viewing for your everyday fan. And now free to view, you have those five games, the odd bit of FA Cup action and England internationals. That will be live football that you'll get. You'll hardly have any live football at all on free to view without buying a Sky or a satellite or a cable digital subscription. It's a big, big shame. We want to get into that and all things Premier League football today. And I'm delighted to say that we have our guest for Monday joined and ready to chat all things Premier League football. A man who rejoins the WFD airwaves after an extensive absence. He's not injured, but he's not fighting fully fit today either. We bring him on as our super sub, Mr. Jonathan Liu from The Telegraph, joining us here on WFD. John, I hear you're not feeling 100% today, but we appreciate you making the effort and coming on the show today, my man.
Not a problem, Ollie. I'm not 100% fit, but I'm prepared to fight for my place, do it for the fans.
I'm sure they'll be giving you a warm welcome, that's for sure, as you step into the game, my mate. I noticed today you've been discussing something that maybe our American viewers obviously won't be too linked to, but obviously anybody that else listens from the UK and whatnot will be very interested to be discussing about this BT Sport and the £900 million purchase of exclusive Champions League rights. Just quickly, Jonathan, I don't want to dwell on it for too long, but what does this mean for the Champions League as a competition as a whole? Does it have a big impact with this amount of money being thrown about by a television company?
Well, specifically, it's a big thing for the English clubs because in the Champions League, TV money is kind of divvied up by country, and this kind of £900 million flows into the coffers of whichever English teams happen to be competing in the Champions League in that given season. So it has an impact on from that side of it. It also makes the Europa League a lot more prestigious from 2015 because the winner obviously gets a Champions League place from then on. And it's just money flowing into the coffers of what is, I guess, now the most prestigious and most lucrative tournament in the world.
It's a big loss for the general public of the UK that aren't willing to shell out on Sky Sports and BT Sport. And is it going to be a big impact on those who already have these? Because surely Sky won't be dropping their price. BT will be raising their price to accommodate this new huge amount of money that's been invested into live football. I mean, the repercussions for the general public are pretty bad at this.
Yeah, it's more for less, essentially, which is, I suppose, the way of the world, as anybody who's tried to buy a pint in London over the last few years has found. It's just, Sky won't drop their prices. What we'll be seeing is an incredibly fierce bidding war for the next major sporting rights to come up. Things like, for example, the Ryder Cup golf or tennis Grand Slam, things like that. And I guess, yes, it is going to push prices up. And it's going to be harder for viewers on possibly not the biggest budget to try and watch everything or try and watch things they want. And the corollary of that is going to be the flourishing of pirate sites, which we can't condone, but that's really what's going to happen.
It is going to have repercussions all around football fandom. But for the fans this weekend, everybody was just mainly looking at what was going on the pitch. And after so much discussion about Ashley Young and diving, and then you head to Stamford Bridge and it crops up again with Ramirez. Jonathan, West Brom, how hard done by should they be feeling this weekend?
It's twice as crushing, I guess, as if they had been drawing and Chelsea had scored a late winner. It's 2 points dropped. It's not 1 point. It was this huge totemic result. It would have been Jose Mourinho's first home league defeat as Chelsea manager. And yeah, they will be feeling, crushed. You saw Ben Foster tweeting just a few minutes afterwards. I won't use the word, but he didn't like it. He didn't like the decision one bit. It's one of those decisions that really kind of sends you. Like the West Ham coach going back up to the West Midlands after that game would have been completely silent. It would have been absolutely steaming. And anybody's kind of played in a football game or whatever, or just got a rough piece of dusting, they'll just feel as though they've been kicked in the balls.
Where is this Chelsea side going wrong at the moment when it does slip up in Premier League football? Because it's very much still the same side, aside from Eto'o and Willian, as from last season. So why are they just not as cohesive under Mourinho as they were under Benitez?
I don't think the back four is as solid as it was. Like, it's definitely not looked as solid as it did last season. You've got Azpilicueta, who's been a great, who's great going forward. I still don't think he's the equal of Ivanovic or Ashley Cole at the back. He's been playing at left back a little bit of late. John Terry, the slow and mournful decline of John Terry, like a sort of sponsored sea lion at London Zoo, continues apace. You've got Gary Cahill, who missed whole parts of last season, probably isn't quite as fully integrated and into this kind of well-oiled machine as he'd like to be. And then there's David Luiz, who is, of course, David Luiz. So you've got this Chelsea side who are still kind of, as a back five, still kind of feeling their way around each other a little bit. Some are coming, some are going, and they're not quite gelling as a unit. And that's led to some sloppy goals being conceded.
Do you buy into that Mourinho's not happy with the players that he has in the squad, and we're going to see vast changes to be that more disciplined, defensive, boring, dare I say it, Mourinho style that we saw at Chelsea when they were so successful under him so many years ago?
Well, yeah, for all this talk from Mourinho of an expansive, free-flowing side made in Chelsea and stuff probably filled with complete moron with posh accents. That's a joke. it's going to be the big games. If you look at what Jose Mourinho sets up his side in big games, that's really the telltale sign of what his philosophy is. And if you look at the early season game at Old Trafford, no striker, a very cautious outlook, and that I really think is the old Mourinho in a way. And in the big games, he's still going to revert to that kind of cautious streak in him.
Elsewhere around the Premier League, Jonathan, this weekend there were big games all over the place and huge results that would impact and will impact on the Premier League title race this season, I'm sure. Before we talk about Manchester United and Arsenal on Sunday, the game before that, why can't City go to Sunderland and get anything? It's happening time and time again. What is it about the Stadium of Light for Manchester City?
It's an away problem for Manchester City. They've actually got one of the worst away records in the entire Premier League. It happened at Villa, it happened at Cardiff, and Sunderland as well. And they looked incredibly shaky for long periods against West Ham before coming up with a win there. It's got to be an attitude problem. It's got to be because the team is not being set up markedly different away from home than it is at home. So what you've got to assume it is it's a certain it's a kind of mental distinction that their players are making between home games and away games, and they're approaching it with perhaps maybe 1-2% less vigour than they would need to claim a victory at these sort of places. They've had a bit of bad luck, but the stats are showing that they're not really knocking the ball around anywhere like as fluently as they should be doing.
There's still changes and continuous changes from Pellegrini to his starting lineups. Very little consistency in terms of the midfield and the back four in the players that play. Do you think he's still not sure of the which players link and play well with each other, the best in his squad? Or is it this just him just rotating things around to try and keep everybody happy?
The problem, the main problem they've had is two well-delivered crosses. They looked... they look incredibly shaky in the last few minutes at Cardiff when they started swinging the ball in. And now I think why he's brought in Di Michaelis, despite his obvious lack of pace, mobility, or style. You've got Javi Garcia, who's fine with the ball on the ground, but is still liable to get beat in the air. Vincent Kompany, who's been a big loss for them when he's been out. And Nastasic, who, again, has looked very good in some games and pretty average in others. So I think there are a lot of potential weaknesses in this City defence, and there is no one single defensive partnership that really addresses all of them. That's the conundrum that Pellegrini's got to solve.
This is a massive win in terms of Gus Poyet and his start as a Sunderland manager. Do you think this is any indication that he is starting to get a bit of cohesion out of his side, or is this more of a case of Sunderland raised their game because one of the big boys came to town to play against them?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need to give a team talk when Manchester City are coming to your stadium and you've got 50,000 fans. That's not a test of motivation. It's a test of tactics, and it's a test of setting up your side. And he seems to have passed that very well, as he did against Newcastle. It's these sort of, I don't like the cliche, but it's these kind of six-pointers where you're really going to feel the skills of Poyet, if indeed he is going to keep them up. I remember sitting at the Amex Stadium after he just lost at home to West Ham, and Sam Allardyce had booted the ball long and harried and played a very ugly game and come away with a 1-0 win. And Poyet said afterwards, I could easily lump it long, get a 1-0 win, fine, I'll go home. I don't want that kind of football. I play for glory, and football without risk, there's no glory. The real test is going to come when he has to mix it. He has to really kind of grit out 1-0 wins, and that's where you're going to see the real test of Poyet as a manager.
The supposed disastrous season for Manchester United took a big twist in the right direction this weekend, as they were able to get 3 points against Arsenal, who are still just about top of the Premier League at the moment. United, a big win for Moyes, but for Arsenal, does this highlight the lack of depth in their squad in terms of Wenger being able to change things in that game with his substitutions, especially up front?
Yeah, the lack of depth on the Arsenal bench has been sort of a recurring theme for a few weeks now. It's important to remember they're still without almost an entire team of players. No Walcott, no Podolski. Oxlade's still out for several weeks. And it's kind of natural that there are going to be gaps in the squad with those sorts of injuries. I do think that they look vulnerable if something happens to Giroud, or if Giroud is becalmed as he was yesterday. It's more of an issue with, I think, Manchester United playing an exceptionally good defensive game yesterday. Arsenal will be in the title mix if they carry on the way they're playing.
What about the defensive pairing of Koscielny and Mertesacker? Obviously split up this weekend with Vermaelen filling in at centre-back instead of the German. Those two had a very good bond last season at the end of the year. Can Vermaelen slot in? He was such a big player for Arsenal even 18 months ago or so. Can Vermaelen come in and replace Mertesacker competently, do you think?
It's strange, isn't it? It does look kind of sad for Marlon Lee. He looks like a guy who's not played very many matches, and he got beaten to a lot of 50-50 balls, a lot of second balls yesterday. He'll need a run in the side. I mean, this is the thing with all defenders, really. That first season, when not only did he stop a lot of goals, but he actually scored a lot of goals. He had a consistent run in the side. He was the first pick. These days, His pretty much his biggest job of the week is to write the captain's notes in the club programme, which he still has to do, despite the fact that he's not really playing. He just needs a run on the side. He just needs... I think him and Koscielny won't have done as much drilling in training together, obviously, as they did when they were first choice pairing. So if that is going to be a viable partnership, then they're going to take a bit of time to get to know each other again.
Few unhappy Arsenal fans with Van Persie's reaction to his goal on the weekend, but surely the time has passed for that sort of playing down the celebrations. Do you begrudge Van Persie celebrating, Jonathan? Do you think it was a little bit too OTT or unnecessary at all?
I mean, that's, he took a season. It took him a year. I mean, he scored those close to league games. And he, it's nice and new to run back to the, you know, a little handshake with his teammates, you know, run back to the centre circle. I think he's served his time. He's served his penance. He's had his time in the doghouse, and this clearly made a great deal to him. And if you listen to some of the people who are at the game and some of the things that were being shouted at Van Persie, you know, I think it's only natural that he would want to react that way.
Wayne Rooney continues his stellar start to the season as well. Are we seeing Rooney more comfortable because he isn't being watched over so intently by Sir Alex Ferguson? Is this Rooney with a little less pressure on him because he knows the eyes of big Sir Alex aren't watching over him from the bench?
There is definitely a Ferguson element to it, because you remember last season, there was all this... this hoo-ha about him being forced to play in this kind of advanced midfield, deep-lying playmaker, Trey Cartista, you know, jack-of-all-trades role, which he supposedly so disliked. Now, you'll note that in the Arsenal game, he pretty much played exactly that role. You look at his heat map, you look at his touches map, and he's pretty much playing in that same role, which he supposedly found such a distasteful job against last season. So yeah, that, I mean, there is definitely a personality element there. He ran. I think he's running like a guy who feels like he has a point to prove, but also kind of feels like the main man there, which I guess he hasn't. In the last couple of seasons, it's a very psychological player, Wayne Rooney. He'll run if he's got the incentive to do so. And I think he's got that at the moment.
Is this the worst time to have this sort of a big win for Moyes? With suddenly you've got the international break and everything gets broken up. Would he prefer it to just go straight headlong into the next game and ride this momentum?
Yeah, I'm not sure Moyes is that much of a momentum manager. I mean, but yeah, certainly when you come off a win like that and you've now got a break for 2 weeks. It seems to me that this there was something about that win that was kind of redolent of the way Liverpool always used to kind of nick little 1-0 wins against United. I'm not sure it'll make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things. I don't think it's a kind of a bellwether of how the title race is going to go. I still think United have got plenty of weaknesses, especially in midfield. I still think Arsenal have got a first team that is easily good enough to win the title. I think it might. You know, don't sort of take me. This is exactly what you're doing, but I know that. but this come the end of the season might be one of those results that's more of a red herring than a weather vane.
We will. We shall see about United's fortunes bouncing back off this result. Just finally, Jonathan, last game I'd like to touch on with you quickly: Southampton against Hull City. I mean, what a surprise package Southampton continue to be, and they continue to get results and stay in that top three. Do you think that the players that have been pulled up to this England side are good enough to not only be in the England side, but to be considered for a place to Brazil as well next summer?
Well, we all had a little laugh about it in the last week, didn't we? About this idea of Jay Rodriguez effigies being burned in Chile, and the German media coming up with how to stop Ricky Lambert and having a laugh. But you know, they are very, very good players, and in the case of Lallana, certainly, and possibly in the case of Luke Shaw, who's not in this squad but could well be in a future squad, they are good enough to play for top six sides. And so the fact that they are, you know, they're currently playing for Southampton is again a little bit of a red herring. They are, you know, Lallana is clearly a very, very talented player. He's two-footed, and that's what makes him such a kind of a difficult prospect. With certain wingers, you know which way they're going to go most of the time. Lallana, he can, as they say, he plays on the left, he plays on the right, and Lallana makes Messi look decidedly ordinary. And Lambert is definitely more of a kind of an up and down centre forward. He's a stopgap, I guess, for the time being. But Lallana definitely is one of those players you can really put a run together. And if he puts a run together, if he settles in, why not?
I was wondering where you're going to go with the colourful language there, Jonathan. And I have to say, I'd much rather hear that coming from the stands of a ground than what the word that would be used to fill in that. That's for sure. Can they stay there? Can they stay up there? I mean, they've faced some big teams, but they've got Arsenal and Chelsea coming up in their next two games. That's a big acid test for them, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think, even if they lose those two games at the end of their calendar, I don't think if they win those two games, it'll confirm their top four credentials. What it is, I think, is what we're seeing. What we saw with Newcastle a couple of years ago. Sometimes it takes clubs the best part of the season to work a side out, which is not to say that Sunderland will get worked out, but teams are going to get better at playing against them. It's such a distinctive style. It's such an aggressive style. Once one or two teams start to work it out, that might happen towards the end of the season. Maybe they won't enjoy the success they have done. But it's an incredibly successful system at the moment that they've got.
Jonathan, it's an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you. Always brings a smile to my face on what could easily be a dreary Monday morning for most people. But I'm sure you'll be brightening up both mine, Rafa's and everybody else's day here at World Football Daily, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. Get yourself better and back off to bed, mate. And have a cracking week and look forward to the England games.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Cheers, Jonathan. Thanks a lot. Jonathan Liu there from the Daily Telegraph joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Premier League football from the weekend. Southampton, will they be a top four side at the end of the season? And how will that change? Because, of course, now, because of the money BT Sport put into the Champions League English sides, there is £20 million on offer for each English side that gets into the Premier, the Champions League, the Premier European club competition. Absolutely incredible. And of course, some people speculating that will mean that the Europa League will have more importance. A, because the amount of money that teams get will rise for that. And also because of that Champions League position available for the winners of the Europa League. So very key telling points indeed in terms of European football and how it's going to change the state of play both at home and abroad. We will touch on that a little later on. Maybe a little later on in the week. We did touch on it, of course, earlier in the show as well. This weekend, though, had plenty of thrills and spills. As we said, Manchester City losing at Sunderland once again. Phil Bardsley, would you believe it? Played in by Wes Brown, tucking it past Pantilimon. Is that the end of his time in goal for Manchester City? Who knows? Not given much help by his back four, that's for sure. Although, very nice to see Micah Richardson there once again. I'm a big fan. Ramirez, diving, cheating, whatever you want to call it. Was it? Most people here in the UK saying that it was. Eden Hazard tucking away the 96th-minute penalty to deny West Bromwich Albion what would have been a deserved 2-1 lead late on. What a rise by Shane Long at the back post as well to head that one in. What an absolutely magnificent rise to get above everybody, because he's not the tallest guy. I think we all know that. Shane Long, one of the hardest workers, I think, in the Premier League, fully deserved that. Liverpool continue their good start to the season. Luis Suarez with two strikes on the afternoon against Martin Yol's Fulham Skirtle, as well adding one and an own goal from Amor Bieta in the opening 25 minutes of that game. Fulham are in real trouble this season. Footage there of Darren Pent and co having a laugh and a joke behind Yol on the bench, but it was no laughing matter for Martin Yol. We will talk about something that happened in that press conference, I think, a little later on as well. Southampton with that great 4-1 win against Hull, absolutely smashed them. This was a bad week for IKTS, that's for sure. I know I got minus 30, and I don't think there are many people that got in the plus points from who I've spoken to over the last few hours or so. Norwich, big come from behind win for them. Leroy Fer, Gary Hooper, and Robert Snodgrass. Snodgrass was a great strike, all getting their names on the score sheet after Ravel Morrison put West Ham ahead off just after half an hour. I was watching a bit of that with a Norwich City fan actually on Saturday evening time, and he was looking very unhappy indeed. I didn't see him when the goals started to fly in, but I'm pretty sure he'd been quite ecstatic at that. Chris Hughton will be keeping hold of his job for a little bit longer. And then we moved into Sunday. As I said, Manchester City dropping to Sunderland. Big win for Manchester United against Arsenal. What did you make of Van Persie's celebration? Too much or just the right amount? Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 31090984. The Facebook page as well are the ways to get in contact with us. Stoke with a very lucky penalty, 96th minute again for them, gives them a 3-3 draw against Swansea City in what was an absolute thriller down at the Liberty Stadium. Wilfred Bonny with two strikes really suddenly found his form after Stoke City went 2-0 up. John Walters and Stephen Ireland with the goals for them. Bonny, Nathan Dyer and Wilfred Bonny again getting the goals for Swansea before Charlie Adams' 96th-minute penalty. Controversial indeed. A couple of games to talk to you about. We'll hear first from from the people who were involved in those games. First up, Aston Villa against Cardiff City, a big 2-0 win for Villa, who were on a four-game winless streak, hadn't scored in those four games, had only conceded four, but wasn't great for them. Here's what manager Paul Lambert had to say after their 2-0 win against Malky Mackay's Cardiff.
I thought we started the game really well again. As I said before, I wasn't too worried about the chances because I knew we were creating them, and it was the same against Everton, against West Ham. I just knew we just needed to keep persevering and get a goal.
And this is without Agbon, Lahore, Vyman and Delf.
And Luna. So, Okora. So, that's a big chunk of your squad when it ain't the strongest in depth. So, you look at that, it's a fabulous result.
Bakuna was over the ball for the free kick. Would it normally have been El Hamadi who'd have taken it because he'd just gone off?
No. Leo's, when we practice him, Leo tends to hit them in training as well. And he's, I thought the Manchester City goal was a world-class goal, but I think that might surpass it.
Never gave up, did you? Because they're a stuffy old side, Cardiff. They're good, well organised, aren't they?
No, very much so. Malky's done a very good job there, and they've picked up some terrific results on the road, so I knew how hard it was going to be, but I thought we deserved to win again.
Paul, that win ticks off two big boxes of ending the winless drought and the goal-scoring drought. It must be a relief.
No, listen, the relief comes for you guys. It's not from myself. I know what the lads give me. I know exactly what they do. I know exactly what they do in training. As I said, I thought we were the better team throughout the afternoon.
Going into half-time, the game had lost a bit of pace. It was a little flat. What did you say to the Villa players to get them coming back out with a bit more fire in that second half?
Oh, listen, that's one thing I can never label, lads. The lads, they galvanised it themselves, and they're the ones that come out and play the game. And I said, I thought the second half we were worth the winners.
What did you make of, with Vyman and Bong Lahore out, what did you make of that partnership of Cossack and Benteke up front this afternoon? It's something we haven't seen too often before.
I thought they were a handful. As I said, it's not just Gabby and Andy. You've lost Fabian and Luna, Okora. We've lost a big chunk of our side that started. And when you lose that amount, it's tough.
And the way in which you took the lead as well through that magnificent free kick must have given you a world of confidence that you were going to finish that game and get the 3 points.
Well, Leo's done it before. As I said before, I thought against Manchester City, his goal was world class, and I think that surpasses it because I think he was wider out and he's got to make the ball come back in, so it was a terrific goal.
And Paul, the second goal was crucial, wasn't it? Because that really sealed the points for you.
He probably finished the game, yeah. And Matty done great keeping it alive at the back post, and it's a brilliant header from Kozak when you look back on it. So I was delighted with the team.
And Bakuna's free kick, a similar goal to what he scored against Manchester City. Which of the two do you think was better?
I think that one, because it was more wider. The one against Manchester City was central at the goal, and that one is a little bit wider, and he's got to try and get it up and down, and he done it.
And patience was key today. You did create chances early in the first half, and in the second half you had to wait for your chances, but in the end they came, didn't they? The goals came.
No, they did, and as I said, that was perseverance, and we upped the tempo, and as I said, I thought we were worthy winners.
Good, cheers, Paul.
Thank you.
Quick word on the back line, if I may, Paul. Didn't have a lot to do, but that's four clean sheets this season. There's only five last year. That's really encouraging for you.
No, but we've really developed as a group and as a team, and as I said, we're up to joint ninth at the minute, and we've had a really, really tough start. When you look at our start, it's probably one of the toughest that I've ever encountered, and it's been a really good start for us.
In Staunton, Solano, Milner, Villa have had a few dead ball specialists over the years. How highly do you rate Bakuna in terms of his free kick specialism?
Well, I see him doing it in training, to be fair, and he hits the target more than not, and I thought that goal surpassed the one against Manchester City. But he's creating that niche for yourself where he can hit them.
Just very finally, how's Fabian Delph not in the 18 again today?
No, he tucked his knee the other day in training, and so we had to leave him out. And but it's not just Fabian, you've lost Gabby and Luna and Wyman, big players for us. It's performed early part of the year.
So you're grateful for the international break, are you there?
At this minute, yeah, I am. Yeah, it's well deserved for them, and it will make everybody feel a bit more happy. Thank you.
Cheers, congratulations.
Paul Lambert there talking about the big win that his Villa side got this weekend. The man of the moment, though, he scored against Manchester City with a sublime free kick from 20 yards away. He scored again with a magnificent free kick in front of the whole 10 to give Villa the lead against Cardiff from about 25 yards out. Here's what Leandro Bakuna, first, here's how he scored, and then here's what Leandro Bakuna had to say about his performance this weekend.
It'll be the right foot of the midfielder. Bakuna over the wall and into the top left-hand corner. And Leandro Bakuna has fired in a magnificent free kick at the Holt end to give Aston Villa a 1-0 lead here at Villa Park. It was a beautifully hit free kick from 25 yards. It dipped over the top of the wall and down into that top corner. Marshall didn't move for nothing. And at 75 minutes, it's Villa 1, Cardiff City 0.
We were all relief. I think the whole team was relief. And we did a great performance today. And we stepped up to the game and had a good result.
You're becoming somewhat of a dead ball specialist, aren't you? Really good free kicks against Manchester City and now here today.
Yeah, maybe it's lucky, maybe. But I'd say what I'm doing is practicing. And if you keep practicing, then you and the luck will return to you.
Which of the two was your favourite?
Against Man City, I think.
What were your reasons for that? Why did you prefer that one?
I don't know. They're both good. They're just on the right moment for the team and for myself also.
Did you feel the relief around the stadium when you scored that goal?
Yeah, I think especially, I mean, like, we're playing the game and of course the stadium want to see like that we're winning all the games. But I think for the whole team, for everybody, it was a relief, so it's really good.
How are you enjoying life at Villa Park? You seem to have cemented your place in the right side of defence, keeping Matt Lowton on the bench. Are you enjoying yourself here now?
No, I think everybody needs to play. Maddie is doing great at the moment, and he's just a little bit unlucky in the moment. But his chance will come, and I'm just try to improve my own game, and of course the gaffer will make his choices.
Because you're part of a defence that's kept its fourth clean sheet now this season. They only kept five all year. What's going so right in terms of keeping the ball out of your net?
I think our team shape is just good at the moment. We are standing good. I think in the front also we are creating a lot of chances, but we didn't have enough lucky on the time now. But it's going to come, it's going to be all right. I think we just need to keep going what we're doing on the moment and keeping clean sheet. And then we're going to win more games.
Is that a win, Leandro, that the team felt was coming after a few unlucky results in recent weeks?
I think... Yeah, maybe. I think what I'm just saying, it's just a little bit unlucky, but if we keep going, then the results will come.
And it's good to go into the international break with those 3 points after a bit of a drought.
Yeah, for sure. I think for everybody it's like a relief for what you were saying, and we can relay on these 3 points now and wait till 2 weeks, and then after we can go again.
And in 2 weeks' time, you've got the big game against West Bromwich Albion, local derby. How excited are you personally to play in that?
Derby is always great to play, and of course I didn't play like a derby in England yet, so it's going to be a whole new something for me, so it's going to be a tough game for us. What I'm saying, we just need to go out there and show ourselves again and do what we're doing at the moment.
Both sides have had good starts to the season. Are you wanting to cement yourselves as the top dog in the Midlands?
No, I'm just staying same calm. I'm just playing for Villa and I'm enjoying it, and we will see where we'll go.
And you played at right back today, but you do like getting forward as well. Is that something that you'd like to be pushed maybe further up the field at points?
I don't make choices. I'm just a player, and I can play. I think for my youth, I played everywhere, and it can be something good, it can be something bad. But as long as I'm playing, I'm happy.
And you scored a wonderful goal today, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Leandro Bakuna there talking to myself and BBC after that fantastic victory for Villa. It was an absolutely terrible game if anybody watched it. I'm sure Villa fans will agree that that first half was absolutely dire. We kept cutting to mid-game reports, match reports, and we were just saying there's nothing happening. There's absolutely nothing happening. You know, a shot from 30 yards away, that's it. Nothing has happened in this game. Second half, Villa came out with a little more aggression and really turned the jets on themselves, as Paul Lambert said. Started to take the game to Cardiff a bit more. Bakuna's strike inspiring them, and then Libor Kosac with his header from 6 yards away, wrapping up a 2-0 win. It wasn't pretty, but my goodness, at least we had something to talk about after the second half and Lambert's side breaking that duck of a four-game winless streak, as I said. Then we moved into Sunday as well. I was lucky enough to be down at White Hart Lane for the early kickoff. Tottenham against Newcastle. As I said earlier, I was chatting with Mark Bright about a few things down there. before the game, during the game. There's a very funny story that I will tell when Rafa joins us in just a mo. But during the game, Brad Friedel making his 450th appearance, top marks to him. Lovely chap, who you'll hear in a minute that I was actually probably cheesed off a little bit. He wasn't a big fan, I think, of the line of questioning I was taking. And I'll tell you, I'll tell you this after we've listened to Brad. But Tottenham with an onslaught on Newcastle. 75 minutes, pretty much, of Tottenham just throwing everything but the kitchen sink at Newcastle. Tim Krul with a magnificent, one of the best goalkeeping performances you will ever see. Tim Krul's was on the weekend. A mistake by Paulinho in the centre of the pitch led to a wonderful ball from Kabay, played through Loic Remy, who nipped in between the back four, was completely lost by his marker, Dawson, and rounded Brad Friedel. Nothing Friedel could do about it in his 450th appearance in the Premier League. And tucked the ball away for the 1-0 scoreline. Tottenham then, as I say, just started to chuck everything. Soldado forcing a great save with a back-flicked header. Krul with reaching up to the top right-hand corner and tipping it out of the air with his right hand. Then we had an effort from Paulinho, curled in first time for the edge of the 18-yard box. Krul getting this time up to his left top-hand corner and palming it away. Then the second half, the saves that Krul made were just absolutely magnificent. There was one, the deflected free kick. Paulinho clips the wall with his free kick. Krul's going one way, leaps back the other to his right, tips the ball away, and then scrambles out to get a flapping arm at it. And Yang and Bia manages to get there to the loose ball 4 yards out before three other Tottenham players go charging down on it and clear the ball away. And Krul just kept up these saves. Eriksen was denied by the feet of Krul. Soldado had another one saved by Krul. It was one of the best performances. 14 shots on target. Tottenham had 14 saves for Tim Krul. Quite magnificent after that game. We were lucky enough to have a quick word with Brad Friedel after the game. Hugo Lloris, of course, dropped after a late concussion test, proved that he was still suffering after the knock that he had. It raises the question of AVB, really, if he's not fit enough to play this week, why was he fit enough to continue in that game last week? Definitely a topic for discussion as well, with possibly a head injury expert later on in the week, that's for sure. But Friedel making his appearance, here's what he had to say after the game.
Outstanding today. I mean, even in the first half, we were very poor to our standards in the first half, but we still carved out, I think. There was two or three decent chances, and he made even two great saves in the first half. The second half time, they were consequences of balls just hitting him or him making great saves. You know, and it was a day that he'll remember, I'm sure.
So was it a good performance or just one of those days?
Well, one of those days are great performances. I mean, as a goalkeeper, we've all had him, you know, along our time. He's had one today, so he's going to go home feeling $1 million. That's for sure.
Frustrating for you guys because obviously you could have gone second today.
Mm-hmm.
Unlucky from your part.
Well, I think not so much in the first half. The first half, they made it a little bit more difficult for us to play out and get any joy in the center of midfield. And release our players up front. Second half, I think there was only really one team attacking, as you guys probably saw. I mean, the stats will probably prove that. I haven't looked at them. But it was just seemed chance after chance after chance after chance, you know, and just unlucky that we didn't score. We're creating so many chances, and it will come good. We got so many quality players. And today it wasn't for a lack of terrible finish, and we came up against a goalkeeper that was in form today. So I'm sure the gaffer will go and look at all the videos and they'll pick things apart. And when everyone reconvenes after international break, I'm sure we'll have a meeting or two.
I heard your goals isn't really a concern in it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we have so many quality players that have goals in them. I really don't think come the end of the season that our goal tally is going to be one of the lower ones. I think it'll be right up there. Today, for instance, I mean, we could have scored six. You know, I think we had enough chances to do that, and I think with the quality that we have, when you see the quality in training on a daily basis, it's not a lack of confidence or anything of that nature, and it will come good.
Is it the frustration that you're now going to an international break on the back of a defeat for the third time in a row this season?
Of course. You know,
it gives you 2 weeks to kind of mull over, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we wanted to get 3 points today, and then we wanted to have an enjoyable afternoon of watching Sunderland play and watch Man United and Arsenal play. And now we have to hope that results go our way to keep everyone as close as possible to us. You know, so it's a completely different feeling. International break, yeah, whenever you lose a game, doesn't matter if you lose 10-0 or 1-0, you want to play straight away. And now we have to wait 2 weeks. You know, the players that go away for internationals, at least they get to escape a little bit and go play a couple of games. You know, those of us that have retired from international duty, we get to stew over it for a couple of weeks.
Brad, I heard you say on the radio the other day that you have to kind of use your experience to be ready to come on at any point, and that comes with experience. That's never been more true in the last week or so that you've had to.
Yeah, I didn't officially know I was playing until this morning. So, but that's not that doesn't faze me at all. I think you could probably tell by the expression when I was at Everton, it didn't really faze me if I was going to be going on or not. I've played many games, and I know what all the teams have to throw at you in different times of the game, what the atmospheres are like. So that's what I think you'd probably want in your number two. So thankful to get a game. Wish we got the 3 points. You know.
As far as you're concerned, did you speak to Hugo this morning? Did he wish you luck?
I saw him at breakfast and I said hello, of course.
But do you know what I mean?
He wished me luck, of course. Yeah, we have a really good relationship, you know, and if I play, he wants me to do well. If he plays, I want him to do well. You know, it's no... I've said this many, many times, you know, when I signed here, they were looking for a long-term number one, and they found one, and they found a very good one. And if I need to deputise, then I'll do it, and I'll try to do it to the best of my ability.
Today's your 450th game. Spurs.
Premier League game. For Spurs, right. Not for Spurs.
I'm sorry.
Just kidding. Yeah, Premier League game. Premier League someone, game. Yeah, someone said that, yeah.
How's it feel? Old? Sorry.
I'll let you know in the morning. No, when you get rack up achievements and games played, you know, the only thing that I probably take pride out of is that that either my form and or form and fitness has stayed intact, and that means that I've been doing something in the right way as a professional. You know, I think I've always just tried to train and play throughout the week and get chosen on the weekend. That's no different now, but I also know where I'm at in my career. So whenever you rack up games like that, yeah, it's a proud achievement, but you know, at the end of the day, we want to get 3 points. You know, 3 points is what it's about. It's not about the individual achievements. I think you came out and pulled, or was it you the other day, the oldest player ever to play in the Europa? Yeah. What do you think of that? And I was like, goodbye.
Just one last one for me. But after a good day like that, you do talk sport a lot, so you know fans will go on there and they'll be like, Spurs not playing well, Spurs got all these players, they're not scoring goals. You know what they'll say. What's your answer to that?
Well, I mean, if you watch this game today, the first half, I think every single one of us will say, yeah, we didn't play well. The second half, I think we played pretty well. I mean, I don't think anyone can say the performance was poor in the second half. And I know the Newcastle players just spoke to their staff. I mean, they wanted the whistle to blow because they knew that they were second best in the second half. Realistically, you can't really listen to a lot of it. We have to go in, you know, with ourselves and rectify what's wrong when you don't win games. I mean, today, we can pick apart the first half all day long, and I'm sure the gaffer will do that. Second half, you know, you have to say not a lot wrong came against a goalkeeper that was in stunning form today. The defenders were blocking shots. I mean, he's even had little Anita blocking shots off Vertonghen at the end, you know, throwing his body in front of it. You know, so they had something to hold on to, which was their one goal lead, and they did it.
Where do you stand on safety for the keepers? I'm not answering questions on that today.
Brad, for the US men's national team, the international breaks, have you ever thought about getting involved and helping out on that coaching side?
Me?
Yeah.
Well,
there's a crop of young keepers coming through as always in the US. Have you ever thought about giving them a bit of experience?
Yeah, but that's not really for me to think about doing, is it? I mean, someone would have to give me a call in order to do that. I mean, I'm currently a contracted player, you know, so, you know, if the Jurgen Klinsmann's in charge of all the hires, I only know Jurgen from playing against him and a couple of meetings. So as far as that, I mean, giving it a thought and actually something coming to fruition are two completely different things. You know, the U.S., I'm a fan from afar. You know, that's where it stands. And I know a few of the players, but I don't even know a lot of the players anymore. You know, there's only probably Clint Landon, Timmy Howard, probably only those three that I actually were in a squad with. Actually, I wasn't even in a squad with Timmy Howard. He was younger at the time, by the time I retired. So, you know, those we'll see what happens later on in career. But right now, I'm just concentrated on Tottenham.
Do you keep an eye on things like Major League Soccer?
Of course.
Have you been noticing the performances of Tally Hall recently, especially in the...
Yeah, very good for Houston.
What do you make of him as a young keeper from what you've seen?
I think he looks very good. I mean, I think Nick Raimondo, I know he's not the young keeper. I think he continues to look at it. Jonathan Bush had a great season at San Jose again. Again, one of the older ones. I think you got Johnson and Ameed. They're both at DC and then at Chicago. Both could be good goalkeepers as their careers flourish. You know, you have to wait for the young goalkeepers in the States to have many years under the belts. We all go in peaks and troughs, and you have to see not how the goalkeeper is when everything's going well, see how the goalkeeper is when things aren't going so well, and see how they come through it, and then you see what kind of goalkeeper you have.
I know Major League Soccer is slightly different to the NFL, but have you noticed anything like the Rich Incognito saga that's been going on creeping into soccer in any way, shape or form?
I have no idea what that is.
The hazing, if you will, of players. And,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No idea. No idea.
Who is the guy?
He plays for the Miami Dolphins, but it's been a thing that's come out in US sport about players kind of hazing the new boys coming into a club, getting them to pay for meals.
I've
like
been
that.
Over here since 1992, so the hazing element is long gone.
Soccer or anything like that at all?
I don't know what you're talking about, so I can't even answer the question.
All right, guys. Thank
Cheers.
You.
No worries.
See you guys.
Cheers. Thanks again.
And you can tell there, Brad Friedel, just the Richie Incognito stuff, not exactly what he wanted to talk about. The look on his face when I mentioned NFL, if you could have seen it, it was priceless. Just was like, what? And it was funny as well. A couple of the national guys came up to me and said he knew exactly what you were talking about. You could tell that he knew what you were talking about. He just didn't want to talk about it. But fair enough to him. Brad was a hell of a sport for coming out and having a chat with us, especially after 450 Premier League appearances. That was Brad Friedel there. And you, as you probably noticed there at the end, getting a little tetchy with me. It's another person to tick off the people in football who probably don't want to talk to me again. A man who I hope doesn't say that too often is the man that joins me, as always, at this time of the day. Rafa G. Rafman, how are you doing today, bro?
I am living the dream. Like I tried to tell you before we even just started recording, I think I really messed up my foot, basically, at the weekend. I played my first full field, full 90 match in a really long time, and... I mean, it showed basically for sure. You know, my muscles, my legs, you know, my passes weren't as heavy as they were, as, you know, as crisp as they probably should have been. I made a lot of tired and lazy mistakes, Juice. You know, last week you were talking about how, as a defender, you just know, you know, the first rule, kick it out or whatever that was.
Yeah, kick it out.
Right, if in doubt, kick it out. But the second rule is basically don't kick it
across your own 18-yard box. Oh, you didn't do that, did you?
Juice, like two or three times I did. Oh, two or three times. And after every time, I'm sitting there, you know, kicking my own ass, thinking, why am I being so stupid? Oh, that's right, because I'm fucking having trouble breathing and I'm not getting enough oxygen to my brain. And therefore, I'm making just retarded moves at points and times. But slide tackling was allowed, and that I kind of got back into that towards the end of the match when I was really tired. But yeah, man, so I got like kicked, basically cleated, like on the inside of my like boot, like straight up studs, you know, in the air. Oh man, it hurt so bad that, you know, the other player got a yellow card. I went down, dude, in a mad pile.
Like went down like Ramirez, I'm sure.
Probably, man. Oh, it was painful, man. So anyways, now it's kind of just, it's very tender. I can't really put any pressure on it. And I'm hoping it's not broke. I'm just going to go to work, man, and kind of walk it off. As it were. But
Rafa Gonzalez bringing the play acting down to the lower leagues of US soccer.
Yeah, I know, man. Well,
goes straight down. He's clutching the ankle. Oh, ref, he's really hurt me. Oh, magic sponge, I'm okay. Oh, look at that.
I'm running.
Yeah, come on. Raf, I know exactly what you're like on a football field, my man.
Yeah. So that's me. I'm dead out of shape, but living the dream, man. I had a fantastic weekend. Plenty of football. My Rangers won 2-0 over Airdrie United. And obviously I'm playing with Gio, who's, you know, the editor of the Kickabout blog right now. But there was a longtime listener, I guess, who was like our goalkeeper. And he kind of met me. He didn't tell me this till after the match. So I'm sure he's probably like, never going to listen to us again, Juice.
No. I blame you really, for that and your play acting. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, all of them really cool. I think I played with a couple of them before. And I told Gio, it's Gio's team. I told him, I was like, you know, you guys are really interestingly talented. Like, you wouldn't look at these guys and think, oh, man, these guys can play some football. No, like, you know, it's a very kind of mixed bag, if you were some really there. I played behind this right mid guy called Memo, who was like 5 foot tall and 86 pounds soaking wet, but could run and make, you know, I was very impressed by him. I miss it, Juice. I miss playing full field. I think that's kind of just, it's so much fun to be out there running about full head of steam and trying to get a goal, man. It's so sick. Oh, I missed the goal too. Damn.
Oh, you see, I come on a Monday morning, you know, I'm expecting, you know, some great stories, great weekends. Yeah. I was half expecting maybe you taking a trip off to Utah for the weekend to go and catch that Timbers game from yesterday evening. Should have been done, man. What a game. What a game. Up in Utah, Salt Lake City. What a fantastic fixture for Major League Soccer. After the Dynamo against SKC was... It was very much a feeler outer, I felt, you know.
Well, and I think that they're also tired, Juice. I mean, let's be honest. Like the Dynamo had to, you know, kind of claw and scratch their way past the Red Bulls, in my opinion. And SKC kind of the same thing, you know. I think that, you know, a little bit tired legs, kind of like you said, feeling it out, making sure that they weren't going to, you know, give anything up, basically.
Yeah, and. I think when you look back at that game, it obviously keeps it perfectly poised for the second leg up in SKC, and I think actually that's the exact result that SKC would have wanted. You know, clean sheet against the Dynamo at home, big confidence boost once again for Jimmy Nielsen, who we obviously send some mad props to, as the kids on the street would say, and I think it's SKC. If you'd given them a 0-0 draw, would have bitten your arm off for that, bitten your arm off before the game. So a cracking result for them. The Dynamo with it all to do on the road. Portland though, doing a very good impression of Aston Villa from maybe the last season and the season before under McLeish, and the first season under Lambert. I'm talking about set pieces. This is a side that cannot deal with the set piece at all, in any way, shape or form. What, second from bottom in the league in defending set pieces? RSL, second from top in terms of scoring from them. If you didn't predict that they were going to concede from at least one set piece this weekend. And the Timbers just looked nervous last night as well, did you not think?
They did.
You look at Danso at the back, the mistake for the second. I mean, you know, criminal. Absolutely criminal, that sort of touch. And there's one thing playing a loose back pass back to a keeper, but to not even be composed enough to play that pass back and instead have the ball bumble at your feet and away from you, absolutely terrible, shocking play from him. I have to say he was unlucky on the first goal, Danso, I thought, on Schuler's header. I was watching that, and you look at the way that Danso's marking him, and they're pulling and tugging all over each other. At that point, there's nothing more that Danso could have done to stop him from getting to that without giving away a penalty. You know, they were both 6-1, half dozen the other in terms of the tugging contest, and I'm amazed that Schuler was still able to kind of physically outpower Danso and get his head to that ball. A great header by Schuler, and Portland, I felt, were lucky to go up as well. You know, they started well in the first kind of 15-20 minutes or so, well, 15 minutes. But Will Johnson's free kick, that's got to be saved, right?
Sure. You know what, Juice? I've been reading a lot of people kind of saying, oh, this is the end of Portland. But to be honest, they're heading back to Portland, basically. And if they can just open up play, they'll pick up two goals, no problem. I think that they're not necessarily in a bad position, and they're not out of it yet. I'm
They're not
more
in a good
than
position,
excited.
Raph. They're not in a
more
good
than
position.
More excited juice to see the second leg of this.
Picone's last minute goal to pull them back down by just a two to take back to Portland is a huge game changer. Absolutely massive game changer. We talked about the strike for Houston getting themselves level against Montreal in that first game. And I think second goal for the Timbers last night was just vital. I mean, absolutely vital. Three goals, you're not expecting Portland to do anything. You know, that's when you get into like miracle comebacks. A 2-0 win, right, though, up in Portland with that atmosphere and with, they're going to get a kick up the behind, that's for sure. You know, and they've got a lot of time to prepare themselves going into that next game. You know, it's a big gap between these games. So you have to think that Portland will get themselves mentally adjusted and get themselves ready for the 24th of November when they take on RSL back. What do you make of having such a big long gap between these games as well? Obviously, it's like because of the international break, but 2 weeks between legs. You know, we're used to Champions League, you have one week max. I mean, would you have liked to have seen them maybe rush one in midweek this week, especially with the US already qualified?
Sure. I mean, it's weird that they kind of observed the international break now. You know what I mean?
Oh,
during the season,
I think
they don't.
No, but I think that's not weird at all to me, because this is playoff football. Kind of that they are observing it now rather than the league. I think that just highlights what Major League Soccer's already shown us, which is the league standings at the end of the season don't matter as long as you're in the playoffs. Playoff football is what counts. International break comes along, we're going to shift around playoff football to match up with the international break. I don't think that's too obvious, especially as, you know, what's at stake, the win or go home thing. But I'm just surprised that when they rushed out the first, the last round of games, you know, the very little time between games in that. Obviously, if you've played in that first one-game knockout stage as well, in the fourth and fifth place kind of playoff to go into the conference semifinals, that was a few days before the conference semifinals. So they've rushed everything in, and then suddenly it's 2 week gap. When I'm surprised they didn't say do rush before the international break now, get the conference finals done and dusted, and then give yourself 2 weeks or whatever to prepare and build up to the MLS Cup final.
Sure, I mean, that sounds more of a planned schedule to me. I don't like this 2 week break. I think it kind of, you know, you're going to come back to the second leg and say, okay, what happened? You know, like, it won't be very fresh in your memory. It won't be kind of...
And it'll kill that momentum for RSL as well. You know, they'll be buzzing. They'll have wanted to, like, play this second leg tomorrow, today. You know, let's go to Portland now. Let's finish this job off. Let's book ourselves into that MLS Cup final. Now it's like, well, we've got the international break to sit back and relax. And, you know, if we're not involved in international duty, we'll be just chilling and getting our heads in gear. And almost, like, there's more than enough time to hit the reset button a good two or three times. You know, even if you have a bad week on or off the pitch at training or outside the game for some reason this week, you've still got another week to kind of get your head in gear and get yourself in check for those games coming up on the 23rd and 24th. I do think it's, I don't know, after so much build-up to the playoffs, being like, you know, win or go home, keep the excitement going, you would have thought they'd wanted to bounce off the excitement of the first legs and go into the second legs.
I mean, it keeps that
marketing momentum going as well, surely, of like playoff action, left, right and centre. You can't get away from Major League Soccer. It's our time to dominate, you know, dominate the TV schedule. Major League Soccer is taking over because there's nothing on at the moment. Basketball, early season. NHL, early season. NFL, what? Oh, we still don't have, we're still not getting down into the big playoff kind of build-up picture of that just yet. You know, there's no sport taking over in this period. The World Series is done and dusted. So why not stamp your Major League Soccer might on the airwaves right now and get rocking?
True.
I don't know.
I'm completely with you on that one, Juice. It seems kind of brainless to me, and I'm surprised that it kind of worked out this way. Hey, congratulations, by the way, on the Newcastle prediction.
Thank you.
I just want to throw that out there.
Shame I didn't.
And I know you kind of talked about this with Johnny Blue, but were you the least bit stunned by Sunderland? That was a good one, wasn't it?
Jeez, we were stood outside waiting for the players at White Hart Lane, and somebody said, "Wow, It's just come over some BBC Sport account on Twitter. Phil Barnsley scored a wonderful goal for Sunderland. They're 1-0 up. And this guy just goes, "Oh, mate, that's the fake BBC Sport Twitter account you're following." And he was like, "Oh, well, sometimes they do the real goals, right?" And everyone's like, "No way, no way." And I was like, I'm checking this. I'm not having people stood around. Like, this is too big a thing. You wouldn't make up Phil Barnsley scoring a great goal against Manchester City. It just wouldn't happen. So I went on my Twitter account and started running through some of the other people that I follow and whatever to get confirmation. And I was like, "Hey, guys, got it here. Yeah, about 3 minutes that's ago." True. And everyone's like, "You're kidding me. Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's disastrous. What? No way." And we didn't believe it, still didn't believe it, and checked all the other apps and all this kind of thing. Scores still staying the same. Barnsley, 1-0. And when I missed the Manchester United game and the City game and the Swansea. I wasn't able to catch any of the Swansea Stoke game either, which was an absolute cracker when I saw the highlights because I was down in London still after Tottenham. I did a little bit of walking through London mainly because I got lost. And I got back home and checked all the scores and just couldn't believe it. You know, the way that Swansea game played out with the luckiest, most fortunate way for Stoke to get a penalty. And then you've got that City result as well. I mean, City do not like going to Sunderland at the moment, do they? Really don't. You remember when they were in the title fight and, you know, 2 years ago now because they had no chance last year. But you remember, you know, the season they won the title and they went up to Sunderland and almost blew it there. You know, were it not for that amazing late season comeback, people would have been saying City lost the title at Sunderland because, last minute, City pile everybody forward and Sunderland just hit on the counter-attack with, you know, 60 seconds to go. Tucks it past Joe Hart, G does, and the Stadium of Light's in absolute hysterics. I mean, it was unbelievable, that match. And again, similar thing happened. Just the most unexpected person to pop up, Barnsley. Wes Brown having a scorcher of a game yesterday as well. Absolutely unbelievable. I got one more thing I want to tell you about quickly, Raf, because this to me sums up what football journalism can be like at times. Okay, so we're sat in the press box at Spurs, and a ball gets hoofed out of play. It comes kind of over our heads. And at Tottenham, you have the first kind of tier of fans. Then you have boxes. And then you have the second tier above those boxes. And the ball comes looping down. It strikes off a box. And just before it hits the box, one of the guys behind me goes, "Boys, this one's coming our way." And everybody turns, watches where this ball's going to bounce off the box. It comes straight down, lands two rows behind me. And one of the guys from The Guardian gets up, nods the ball away, perfect header back onto the pitch, you know. He does a little kind of like fist pump, yeah! And then there's about six people in the press box, just and where the press box is at Tottenham, you're about 10 yards away from the dugout kind of thing, less than that, 6 yards away. You could reach out and call AVB and tell him to bring on, you know, Jermaine Defoe kind of thing, if you really felt so inclined, but of course, you do that, you're never coming back again. And there's about six of us in the press box just start going, "Sign him up, sign him up, sign him up," like Yovish football fans for a minute or two. I just thought it was absolutely kind of just a great little moment that shows that however much, you know, football journalists have, people have got their heads on, and however much, you know, quotes get, it's been annoying me today once again, the quotes that I've taken from this week being manipulated and turned into kind of stories that aren't true, but we'll keep that off air for the moment because I don't want to offend any of the national journalists that I've been working with this weekend. But it still shows that we're all kind of football fans at the end of the day as well. You have to be a football fan to to be able to do this job. But
well, and to be quite honest, Juice, like it's a little bit refreshing to hear that because there's several an occasion out here when I, you know, recall basically, you know, looking at certain journalists who just, first off, probably never played the game, aside from maybe like AYSO when they were five. And secondly, still currently don't play the game. And like you said, aren't necessarily fans of the game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like there's something to be said about, you know, somebody who loves their job and, you know, who, like, I get a sense from you when you go to games that you're generally enjoying yourself, you know, like you like to go commentate on games because, you know, even if you have to kind of like show bias to someone that you don't like, it's still entertaining for you to go watch a football game, which, you know, I get, I feel that. And I think that also, you know, your listeners kind of feel that as well. And the same goes for journalists and writers. I feel like, you know, if they've one, played the game, two, enjoy the game, or, you know, have a passion for the game still to this day. And that all kind of transpires through their writing.
It's like John Cross, you know, he loves Arsenal. You just know that whenever he writes about it. And he was at White Hart Lane yesterday, and you could tell that he was so happy that Tim Krul was making all these stops. You know, he was a couple of rows back from me, and he and this chap started discussing Andros Townsend. The guy's had 45 shots come the final whistle. He's had 45 shots on goal this season, Townsend, which is a ridiculous amount for especially somebody in his position. And this chap and Cross, midway through the game, started counting each shot. So it was like, you know, Townsend would crack one, it gets blocked or something, and it would be, all right, 41. A few minutes later, there'd be another one, 42. You know, just enjoying kind of taking the mick a bit out of the whole situation that they find themselves in, and what you're writing about. I think it's great to know when these guys are at, like, big fans, and it's great to have these kind of little moments of pure comedy genius. It's like there's a chap up at West Brom who used to work for the Press Association, who used to always make the same Claudio Jakob joke about, he's got a screw loose, hasn't he? You know, call him Jakob's Crackers. And of course, there's a cracker company in the UK called Jacob's Crackers. But, you know, you pronounce J with a Y in like some languages, so Jakob's Crackers. And he used to make that joke time and time again every week we were down in the mix zone. And everyone would still get a laugh out of it because it's just funny stuff to you. The same with the Daily Mail guy this week, who during Martin Jol's really somber press conference after the 4-0 thumping they took from Liverpool.
He's going to be really lucky to make it through this week.
This Daily Mail chap, Jol's going, you know, oh, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, really downbeat, really sad. This Daily Mail chap accidentally falls through one of the kind of the advertising boards in the press box midway through this press conference, and you're like, oh my goodness. I was reading about this today. You just cannot write something like that. The moment of Jol, like, almost baring his soul a bit, kind of how worried he is about keeping his job, and then this journalist just inadvertently just like falls back through this advertising thing. You couldn't write it. You really couldn't. It's just fantastic when little things like that happen in football. Before we wrap up the show, Raph, we've only got a few minutes remaining. I know. Did you catch anything else? Obviously, it's been difficult to keep up with the Europeans.
Let me read a quick email.
Go on,
sir, if you don't mind. And I think this will take us to a different time zone, actually. So this is from, it looks like, Javier in LA. Subject is Messi, and he says, Messi's, I don't know. I think he messed up. This looks really bad. Messi is done, and we are coming for the top spot. Watch yourself, Barca. Here come the Galacticos, Javier in LA. I don't know what he meant to say at the beginning, but basically,
he thinks Messi is done, injured, as like, right? Injured and
potentially out for 8 weeks. Now, I'm not so sure that really means anybody's going to come in and gun for the top spot all of a sudden. To be honest, I feel like Barca are just completely comfortable. Did you not see them get the 4-1 win?
4-1 win against Betis, that late goal coming from George Molina. Yeah, and you have to say Messi going off after 22 minutes and then the goals started coming, you know. Neymar's completely stepped up to the plate on the weekend and had an absolute stormer. He bags one. Pedro bags one. Fabregas bags two. You're not going to say that this is a Barca side that at the moment, well, on the weekend's performance, it didn't look like they rely on Messi. It's that criticism that we've given them on a number of times.
It didn't seem like
You do have to remember, though, Raph, you do have to remember this is a Betis side that are bottom of La Liga. Okay, so before we start getting too carried away about them relying on Messi or anything like that, or not relying on Messi as the case may be, the Betis, you know, bottom of the league, you're not going to doubt that. What I think now, you know, after the international break, they take on Granada, who are around about mid-table, could be a very difficult fixture for them, and I'm sure they are ecstatic that El Clasico is kind of out of the way. And has been kind of put in the books, so to speak.
And has been won.
Pardon?
And has been won.
Yeah, and well, and it's been done with Messi kind of playing along them as well. But the next few weeks, you know, they've got Bilbao coming up as well. Villarreal, those are going to be the games, Granada, Bilbao and Villarreal, those three games back after the international break that are going to actually, I think, really test Barca without Messi. Villarreal put up a great fight against Atletico Madrid this weekend, getting that 1-1 draw. Granada, who, as I say, are kind of sitting all right in the middle of the pack at the moment. I can't remember even the last one that I said. Oh, yeah, it's Bilbao. You know, we know Bilbao have always got quality in their side, especially Bilbao away from home. A tough, tough place to go. It's a great atmosphere.
Sorry about that.
So you've got to take the result with a pinch of salt.
Ajax?
I think Champions League is booked and they're packed and ready for the next
exactly.
round. So
exactly.
That's not a big deal. You know, Celtic could be a tougher task, though. You know?
Sure.
Celtic, grit. I think, again, they'll be happy that it's Celtic at home rather than having to go to Celtic Park and play them without Messi. You know, I don't think we can say that this week shows 100% that they don't need Lionel Messi just yet. Because
what I'm trying to say is this could even turn out to be a positive thing for Barcelona. Look, they need to kind of let Neymar find his own spotlight there, at the Camp Nou. Make his own mark on the team.
But do you think Messi will like Neymar finding his own spotlight? A spotlight that Messi, I'm sure, will have to jump back into and share with him. Do you think Messi's that kind of guy that's going to tolerate it?
I don't think he's too concerned about sharing the spotlight. I think he knows that this is still his team. And the proof in the pudding is just the whole point that he had the opportunity to leave. He's more than happy there. I think he's, more than happy playing whatever part, for the most part, but Barcelona want him to play. And the fact that he does get a little bit of time off, I mean, that's probably a good thing for him as well. I mean, think about when he's coming back. He's going to be coming back at the prime kind of, as the season really, really starts to heat up, Juice. And I think that could be a really good thing. You're going to have a fresh Messi. You're going to have a team that is already kind of firing on all cylinders and brought along the new guy, basically. And he'll be kind of firing on all cylinders in terms of chemistry-wise on the pitch. I think it's probably a good thing for Barcelona at this point.
What I think is...
They're not going to give up the top spot, and they're not going to, they're not going to have too much trouble going ahead.
I think they will get tested for that top spot, Raf. I think you're giving them too much credit just yet. And I think you need to take a look and see what happens in these next games after the international break. That's for sure, my man. Because I'm just not 100% convinced yet that without Messi, they're gonna be able to do it. When there's been so many of those games where people are stood and almost waiting for Messi to produce that moment of magic. Now, I'm not saying Neymar can't do it. I'm just saying to rely on him at this stage in his career is a big risk. You know, they were able to do that with Messi because they brought him through this squad. This is Neymar that is still new to La Liga and to this squad. They can't put that pressure on him yet. I think it might be beneficial in terms of making them more of a team again. You know, rather than being standing out and people waiting for Messi to do something, it might actually encourage people to take that responsibility on themselves in the same way that England without Wayne Rooney kind of does that. Although on his performances on the weekend and over this season so far, you wouldn't say drop Wayne Rooney at this point for England, that's for sure. But and I think also if they can get through this, I think it makes it a lot easier for them to make sure they don't bring Messi back until he's 100% fit, which I think is a problem that they made this year. But that depends on whether they can actually get those results and maintain their lead at the top of La Liga. We will discuss that later on this week as we have a chat with our Spanish correspondents from around España. Big thanks to Graham Hunter who gave us a cheeky tweet. We mentioned the BT Sport takeover of Champions League football as I touched on with Jonathan Liu earlier today. And I know it doesn't mean much for you guys, but it's a horrible, horrible thought. For us, because it's us going the way of your US cable companies type thing of not being able to get or having to pay an extortionate amount to ensure that you get all of the football that you want to get. And it's no free-to-air football in the UK of Champions League variety or five games a season. It's just unthinkable and unimaginable and disgraceful. But we will But I said to kind of Graham Hunter, you know, over Twitter this week, that he'd said that, you know, he wouldn't change anything about European football. And I said to him, oh, you wouldn't change anything. And then 2 days later, BT go and do this. And he said, well, not quite what I meant, but yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what Graham thinks about that and about Spanish football in general. I'm sure we'll be chatting with him either probably after the international break. We will try and get one of our other Spanish correspondents on later on this week. A big thanks, though, to Jonathan Liu for joining us from the Daily Telegraph. To you, Rafa, as always, for putting this show together. To Brad Friedel, who I must apologise to, for peeing off slightly, as I'm sure you could tell with those Richie Incognito questions from that I tried to ask him. A big thanks as well to Leandro Bacuna, who I had a chat with on the weekend, and you heard here on World Football Daily as well. The scorer of two dynamite free kicks. I tell you what, the press were desperate to try and get himself to compare himself to Ronaldo or Beckham. But he ain't no Beckham. He's just Bakuna. We'll leave it there today. A big thanks to you guys as well. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483, the Facebook page as well. The club podcasts keep on coming throughout the week here on World Football Daily. And of course, the Kickabout blog on worldfootballdaily.com. It's all there for you as well. Take care. Have a cracking Monday. And we'll see you at the same time tomorrow. Have a good one. Oh, and before we forget, happy Veterans Day. And a big thank you to all service men and women around the globe who are obviously serving in our armed forces. Of course, today, on the weekend, we had the Remembrance Weekend in the Premier League. And of course, today, the 11th of the 11th and 11 o'clock today here in England, we, of course, had the traditional minute silence for all those that suffered and lost their lives in World War One and World War Two. Big thank you to them. Big thanks to you guys once again. We'll catch you at the same time tomorrow. Have a good one.
Oh, sweet England, we'll be with you. You know.